Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2 on a Monday morning. Hope your 4th of July weekend was great. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Lots to get to as we sift through the Pugs attacking Jr. at the moment. Just coming in for a little nappy time. Harry's, the Pugs were up very early this morning.
They've been getting, they're working dogs. They get up. Yeah. They work very hard to try and make sure that this show can go off without a hitch. They've earned some rest during this process, and Harry's just decided his rest is going to be right here on the old lap. So
Harry is
to have him.
Harry is settling in for a long winter's nap as we speak. We heard in the rejoin there that, you know, it certainly looks like there is going to be change of the name of the Washington NFL franchise. The statement they put out Friday, the NFL says we support it, FedEx and Nike applying financial pressure. But at the end of the day, this is one of those things that I'm not sure I'm going to believe it until I see it. Because Daniel Snyder, the owner of the team, has dug in his heels on this and spent a lot of his own money basically doing surveys and all this kind of stuff and making a website and hiring these people to come up with the information that he wants, which is to say, no, this honors people. It isn't derogatory in any way, shape, or form, even though it's defined as a racial slur in a lot of ways. But it's one of those things that, yes, it all certainly sounds, Junior, like it's trending toward there being a new name for the Washington NFL franchise when they play, if they play, this season. But my God, it's one of those things I may not believe it until I actually see it happening.
Yeah, we're seeing a situation where a person appears dragging, kicking, and screaming. That's why, like, leave the word morality out of this when it comes to the decision making, because there's no morality when you're being held at gunpoint. There is only
financial
action.
Gunpoint.
Well,
yeah.
And at that point, this may be the point we're getting to now. So obviously, we had all of that news. Over the weekend, we had further news in this regard. Three minority owners are seeking to sell their shares because they're, quote, not happy with being a partner with owner Daniel Snyder. This, according to the Washington Post. Robert Rothman, Dwight Schar, and Frederick Smith, who's Fred Smith, part of FedEx, so that portion of this ownership stake, they all combine to own about 40% of the team. They've hired an investment banking firm to undergo a search for possible buyers. One person familiar with the relationship between Snyder and these shareholders told our own John Keim that he felt this had been a big surprise to Snyder because he considered all these guys to be friends in this process. And Trey, you and I have batted this around on the show this morning. This feels like this is either a convenient out time for people who are unsure about the finances outside of just the world of football to say Daniel Snyder's name's back in the news for all these reasons. No one's going to fault us if we jump ship now. Or, like you said, because we're dealing with one person here in Daniel Snyder who has resisted this every step of the way, maybe it's not as much of a slam dunk once we heard about this name review and they're trying to force this across the goal line by saying, we're sick of this, we're out, unless all of a sudden this goes through, unless you get this across the goal line, change this name. And so an added bit of financial pressure from the other people involved in this internally.
Yes, the one word Daniel Snyder has used throughout his entire time owning the team has been never when he talked about changing the name of the team. And he's been adamant about that. But to your point, there is real financial pressure being put on Daniel Snyder right now. FedEx, which owns the naming right to their current stadium, has said, yeah, we need to address this. Nike has basically taken off the Washington stuff on their page of things you can buy. It's 31 teams, not 32, because Washington would be the 32nd team. And then Dominique Foxworth said this on GetUp, which I thought was really interesting, because there's another financial pressure that, quite frankly, Daniel Snyder is dealing with, and that is getting a new stadium built.
I think that this will be the final straw that pushes them over the edge and forces Dan Snyder to go back on his word and change the name of this team. It's not just that FedEx has kind of turned against them. It's also a lot of local people and local politicians. I know one of the important things to Dan Snyder, and frankly, I was intrigued by what Dan Graziano said earlier, that he said the other owners are going to kind of stay out of Dan Snyder's business, but it becomes all of their business when it impacts Dan Snyder's ability to build a new stadium. He wants to build a new stadium back in D.C. on the old grounds of RFK, and local politicians said that he won't be able to do that unless he changes the team's name. And that, seeing as Washington is one of the most profitable franchises in the league, that'll impact the revenues for the entire league and impact everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, revenue. Let's be honest about it. Like, we're obviously, there's been a lot of social unrest in this country over this summer for a variety of very sound reasons. But at the end of the day, what's happening here is about money. And the idea that money, because of the name, may be stopping flowing in to Daniel Snyder and the team, we need to address it. And that's how things work. That's how this country works. Follow the money. whether it's in All the President's Men and the investigation of Watergate, most of the time, if you follow the money, it will lead you where things actually happen.
Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way that you buy home insurance. You can now go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. And yes, that's what we've seen more than ever, is you've had a very motivated, mobile, and active group of people who have taken the things that they believe in now. And what we've always asked, anytime an issue comes up in sports and fans cry foul, we always say, well, there's a way you can influence outcome. The dollars and cents of this that drive your favorite sports teams tend to listen if you speak loud enough. And in this instance, people that are sick of the way that sports have been doing business, people are sick of the way a team has been having a racial slur as its name for long enough, have spoken up and said it. And sometimes it comes from athletes. We see this with, you know, Kylan Hill at Mississippi State, yep, saying he wouldn't play for them until Chuba the Confederate Hubbard flag was out of there. Chuba Hubbard. We've seen Bubba Wallace and what, yep, he did with NASCAR and the Confederate flag. That is probably going to have a second act now, as the President of the United States just tweeted about that again this morning. So there are all of these things and battles that you're going to have to fight. And the pressure is either coming internally from athletes that are now receiving a larger voice than they have in the past, or from the fan base that echoes some of those opinions and see their place in this as more powerful than ever.
And we had on with us earlier this morning Brian Mitchell, who, of course, is a longtime Washington Redskin, is in their Ring of Fame, a Super Bowl champion with them under Joe Gibbs. Really, it was a remarkable, versatile player. Does work for the team and has his own radio station as well in the D.C. area. And we asked him, because obviously the fan base there is very loyal. HTTR, which is Hail to the Redskins, is a big thing in D.C. We asked him if the name change would if he thought the name change would actually take away fans or bring more fans in. And here's what he had to say on that.
I go with the latter. I think it's going to open it up for more people. And I asked the question on my radio show this week. Do you cheer for the name or do you cheer for the players? Do you cheer for the organization? You know, the name is not necessarily what somebody cheer for. I just think that's our way as Americans, where we're selfish. We want what we want no matter what it does to somebody else. And all these people that are saying, well, if the name changed, I'm going, well, you wasn't a fan anyway. I've never seen someone buy a jersey and put the name of the team on the back of it. They put the name of the players on the, yeah, back of it. So if you love this organization and you see them changing for the better, and if they come out and start winning, the same people around here that had pride in that organization before is going to have pride moving forward.
And that should be the way that it is in all this, because I keep pointing out the names and mascots of these franchises are cosmetic. And while at times they're fun identifiers that are a part of it, they're the part that, relative to what you just heard there from Brian Mitchell, relative to the rest of your experience as a fan, are so far down on the list. Not the memories, the generational ties that bind, and all these things tend to be because of shared experience. This game that we were all at together, this player that blew us away and what they did. Like you've mentioned before, Trey, the colors that we wear, right, and that identifier. When we're out in public and I see someone else wearing the burgundy and gold, I know that's a Washington football fan. I can go up to you and you and I can immediately speak the same language because we've identified that way.
We've bonded.
One of the last few things down on that list is, in any sports team, the mascot that you're dealing with. Unless, yeah, it's a cute puppy, which is awesome, and everybody loves, it's the last thing down on this list, and it is something that should, I think, be very easy to change when it comes to changing your experience as a fan or not.
Yeah, you're right, but it is so visceral for a lot of people, right? It's and what Brian Mitchell's saying, I some of it I agree with and some of it I don't, because we root for laundry. I mean, that's the way it is, right? So if there's Courtland Finnegan is one of the classic examples. If he was playing against your team, he was a cornerback in the years, it was an agitator. That's basically, he was an agitator, professional agitator. You hated him. But then if your team signed him, well, I love that guy. He's scrappy, you know? So everything is shaped by what sort of colors you wear, and the mascot is part of that, and it isn't part of that in some of that discussion for fans.
I truly don't think it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, as someone who's also been a fan of a team that's got a mascot, it is so far down the list of things I actually give a flying bleep
about.
But
I do think it's different for you as a player than it is for someone as a fan.
I would disagree, because, and my parents will both tell you this, I have always been weirder parts fan when it comes to Notre Dame. game, even having played through all that. And I thought it would dissipate, and then I broke a hotel remote while I was watching Notre Dame lose in double overtime to Texas. And I realized some of those things that should have been mitigated. Like, I can't affect the outcome anymore. I got to, like, for years. Imagine as a fan for years getting to affect the outcome of the team you play, you love, and support.
You all think you do that.
Everyone thinks they do. But imagine getting to put on a uniform and doing it, and then not seeing it differently after that. Like, I immediately defaulted back. It's the one area where I say, no, I am truly a fan of this in the way that you are. And so I feel like I understand this one thing at a level that a lot of people do. And it just, like in theory, combining the fandom with having played, something like a mascot should mean more to me, and it couldn't mean any less.
Right. So, again,
I cannot make that excuse for people. All the other things, the colors, the shared experience, whatever you want in that, you can keep on holding on to it. But it's a freaking mascot, man. Like, yeah. And if it's, and clearly we've heard enough, you know, Native American leaders speak out and say, yeah, we're not into this. Like, if that's the case, then this should be so easy. But we're dealing with one person who has been very, very stubborn this entire time. So here we are.
And we'll see what happens as the internal review continues going forward. You know one sport where they don't have mascots? That would be the MMA. They are free of that, and the UFC. And we are looking forward to our debut, ladies and gentlemen, coming up, of that thing we all tried to speak into existence and it happened, Fight Island. And one of the fights on Fight Island is going to be the one we've been waiting for a long time.
Very excited about this one. Jorge Masvidal going to be finally a part of UFC 251 that's taking place on Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. Fight Island going off on this. And Ariel Helwani, who's getting ready to join us now, Ariel Helwani's MMA show is going to do our first ever live virtual event this Friday, July 10th at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can reserve your spot today by going to bit.ly/Helwani Island, all lowercase, to register today. That's bit.ly/Helwani Island, all lowercase, to register today. He's got an exclusive interview with Jorge Masvidal, which is going to be posted shortly. So look for that all on the Ariel Helwani MMA Show podcast coming up today.
And let me just say, as Ariel joins us on the Shell Penzoa Performance Line, we are all in on Helwani Island as much as we are on Fight Island. I want that to be clear. So Ariel, thanks for being with us this morning. Is this the fight that everybody's wanted for a long time?
Oh, guys, so great to be back, and I'm so happy to be talking about this fight, because this is the fight that we wanted since day one. Since Jorge Masvidal beat Nathan Diaz at Madison Square Garden to win that BMF title in November, and then the following month, Kamaru Usman beat Colby Covington in mid-December, this was the fight. And if you recall, in late January, Super Bowl Media Row, they got into a little kerfuffle. They were going back and forth, and it was great promotion, right? No one got hurt. It was all well and good. And we all thought we were going to get it July 11th, but unfortunately, around a month ago, the UFC couldn't come to terms with Jorge Masvidal. He didn't like the offer. They walked away, and they gave it to Gilbert Burns, who's a great fighter, but came at a much cheaper rate, let's just put it that way. But unfortunately for him, on Friday, he had to pull out of the fight, and then come Saturday, they got to talking again, and Masvidal got a great deal that he's really happy with. I spoke to him last night at like 1:30 a.m. I waited up for him, and so I'm a little tired this morning. But I just have to say, I feel so thankful that I get to cover this crazy sport, because in no other sport do you get something like this. A guy on 6 days' notice who has been in the game for 17 years, about to get his first UFC title fight under these circumstances in Abu Dhabi in a heated grudge match. I mean, please tell me you guys are going to be watching, because this is going to be a great show on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. But to that point, as Ariel Helwani, a tired yet still very intellectually stimulated Ariel Helwani, joins us this morning. Why did it take so long for Masvidal to get this fight? Because we've all seen that he is a BMF in every single way. What was the blocking point that finally got through and finally got past to get him the fight that he finally gets a chance at a title?
One word: money.
There it
is.
They
didn't want to pay him what he thought that he deserved. And when they had another guy on the on the sidelines ready to go at a much cheaper rate, they went with Burns. And I was very bummed when they did this, because the UFC has always said, you know, we give the fight that the fans want. We make those fights, right? That's what we do. That's what boxing has never done and continuously doesn't do, and that's what we do. And you know what? They're right, because more often than not, they do that. And this was the fight. And here you had a healthy, ready Jorge Masvidal, who was my 2019 Fighter of the Year, who couldn't have had a better 2019. after knocking out Darren Till. And exactly 1 year ago today, by the way, he knocked out Ben Askren in record-breaking fashion with that flying knee, and then, of course, beating Nathan Diaz. And they couldn't come to terms on a deal, and so they walked away. And to me, that was just so deflating because this was the fight that needed to happen. And then, of course, Burns is out, and they need a main event, and they want to keep the three titles on this card. And so they call his team on from what I understand, they called his team on Saturday. They were still hemming and hawing. They weren't budging. And I heard that Jorge just picked up the phone himself, and he's like, guys, can we cut the nonsense and make a deal here? I'm ready to go. Let's stop this. And that got the ball rolling.
Jorge Masvidal, by the way, going to join First Take at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on FaceTime. And you mentioned everything that went into that and what it could become and staying up late to talk to Jorge. So I'm curious, how is he feeling going into this fight? We know technically he's picked it up on short notice, but it doesn't sound like he's been resting.
No, he hasn't. And by the way, my interview with him is up right now on the ESPN MMA YouTube page. I urge everyone to watch it after Golic and Wingo, not during.
Thank you.
And don't pause Golic and Wingo after, when you guys are done. He's in tremendous spirits. It's unbelievable. Yesterday morning, he took a private plane from Miami to Las Vegas. He says he weighs 190 pounds right now, so he still has 20 pounds to go. Now, don't be alarmed by that. That's pretty typical. But it seemed like he had a premonition that something was going to happen. So once the fight was taken away from him, he didn't continue with his, you know, full-on training camp, but he stayed in the gym. So he's not out of shape. He's not rusty. You know, he just has to maybe shake off the cobwebs. But you have to remember, Jorge Masvidal comes from the streets of Miami. This man is a backyard brawling legend in the Miami fighting scene. Back when he was 19 years old, he was in a McDonald's drive-thru line and got a call to fight Kimbo Slice's protege, a guy named Ray. On hours' notice, they said, can you fight this guy? We're going to film it. We do backyard brawls, right, like barbecue brawls. You've probably seen this on YouTube.
Yep.
He put down his burger. He drove there, and as a 19-year-old, beat a man who I think at the time was like 35. This guy thrives under these conditions. He doesn't need a full training camp. He doesn't need that sort of thing, and that's why he's the BMF. So this just adds to his, you know, to his legend, to his allure, and now everyone's going crazy over this fight because could you imagine if he wins under these circumstances? It will put him in that stratosphere, in my opinion, with Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Well, if in that lines, who's taking the bigger risk here? Is it Masvidal for taking this fight on a week's notice and, as you said, still has some weight he's got to shed and get that taken care of? Or is it Usman, who was walking into a very, very difficult fight here while he was preparing for somebody else?
That's a great question, and I would say Kamaru Usman. Jorge, in my opinion, has nothing to lose. If he loses, people will be like, man, you saved the day. You took a fight on 6 days' notice. You had to fly from Miami to Vegas, then to Abu Dhabi. You had to cut all that weight. Good on you, man. We still love you. That's the one thing that I love about MMA fans. They don't harp on losses like boxing fans. You get one loss in boxing and people call you a bum and it takes you like 15 fights to get back on track. Jorge Masvidal has lost a bunch of times. You know, he almost has double-digit losses and people love the guy. So it's not about the loss. It's just about stepping up and, you know, doing it for the fans, that sort of thing. So Usman was preparing for a guy in Gilbert Burns who's a completely different fighter, more of a jiu-jitsu fighter, doesn't have the same striking style. And now he gets pulled out and the pressure's on him because Masvidal raised his hand. You got to take the fight because if you don't take that fight, now you kind of look weak, right? So he takes the fight. Credit to Usman. He's a great fighter. Never lost in the UFC. But he's the one with the belt. He's the one who's been calling, you know, Masvidal's BMF title, the fake title, a bum and all that stuff. If you lose to a guy who takes a fight on 6 days' notice, that's going to be a tough one to come back from. So to me, all the pressure is on Kamaru Usman's shoulders. And that's what kind of makes it fun because, you know, here you have the champ who's kind of against 8-ball. And by the way, he's a 3-to-1 favorite, probably rightfully so because, you know, he's been in the training camp. But I'm not counting out Jorge Masvidal. I mean, in my opinion, he is a live dog.
Ariel Helwani with us. Ariel Helwani's MMA Show podcast, by the way, has posted his exclusive interview with Jorge Masvidal up right now. So be sure to check that out as well as on the YouTube page, like Ariel mentioned. And I'm curious, we've heard so much about Fight Island and all this too. What is that going to look like for the viewers who have been hearing about this from Dana White for so long? And now this setting is getting the fight that it rightly deserves.
Yeah, and, you know, it's important to note that there's a few more hurdles to get to Saturday. They still have to take 3 more COVID tests. They got to fly to Abu Dhabi. They got to quarantine, take multiple tests. So it's kind of hard to get, like, truly excited about these things because, you know, the sports world that we're living in, the world that we're living in is so different these days. But as far as Fight Island is concerned, I've talked to people who are already there. They say that they're blown away by how everything has been planned out. I mean, they're being very strict about social distancing and staying in your room. There's actually CCTV making sure that the fighters – who haven't gotten their results back yet from their tests. Do not leave your room. If you leave your room, you're in big trouble. But they basically built like this makeshift, I don't know, it kind of looks like a hangar on Yas Island. So when you watch, I want everyone to know, when you watch on Saturday, you're not going to see, you know, waves crashing behind you. You're not going to see palm trees and things like that. It's going to look like your typical UFC card. In fact, they're doing the card in the morning in Abu Dhabi. So a main card, a pay-per-view card in America starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, right? So those fighters who kick off the main card, they're going to be walking to the cage at 6 a.m. Sunday morning to cater to us here in America. And at 6 a.m., in Abu Dhabi, it's typically 105 degrees Fahrenheit. So they're going to be in this hangar, and it's going to be very hot. And the last time they were there back in September, air conditioning was a problem, and the fighters were really fatigued and very much sweaty like from the get-go. So it's going to be interesting to see how everyone deals with the elements. But I want everyone to know a lot has been made of this island stuff, and it's a great thing. And what the UFC has been able to pull off, I truly commend them. But it's not going to be typically like, you know, a cage on the beach. It's not going to be that setting. But who cares, I say. Right. We're getting Masvidal versus Usman. Who cares?
And any way they can bring it to us, we'll take it. So we're running out of time here, but I do have to ask, because you mentioned all those obstacles. Give me odds that we're actually going to see this.
Well, he passed yesterday. Masvidal passed. Usman passed. They're flying to Vegas later today. One would think if they're staying around the same people that they were with when they passed, that they should be okay. But, man, I'm no Dr. Fauci, so I don't know how this stuff works. You pass, you false negative, false positive. I will just be praying to the MMA gods, and I suggest everyone at home does the same, that we get this fight, because trust me, Jorge Masvidal Usman is going to be something special. By the way, before I go, Mike Jr., great job on Saturday. Really enjoyed you on the broadcast with the hot dog eating.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. That
was his Masvidal Usman.
I was
going
to say that was what I was praying for would go off. So Ariel,
great.
I will
you
offer some prayers up to the MMA gods for you, so that we get both Fight Island and Helwani Island on this. Looking forward to the virtual event for you. I know it's going to be great, and I know this event is in the best possible hands with you leading up to it.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and make sure you check out his entire interview with Jorge Masvidal on his MMA show. It's also on the YouTube page, our MMA YouTube page as well. All right, coming up next, they're going to walk into an island bubble, but the NBA bubble is ready to roll and ready to be occupied, and we'll talk to somebody who is already ensconced in the bubble. We'll get to that after this.
After this word from Pennzoil, here's a fact. Not all synthetic bone oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together, and if they get stuck in your socks, God help you. But natural gas, more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction for your engine. It's great stuff. Who doesn't love a marble? That's why Pennzoil reinvented motor oil. They started with natural gas and not crude. Pennzoil's synthetic base oil, is 99.5% free from the impurities that you would find in crude. So next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It's going to give you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. Let's go in the bubble next on Golic and Wingo.
All right, Golic and Wingo with you on a Monday morning. Hope your 4th of July holiday weekend was safe and fun. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you as we're getting set for a very big week in the NBA, Mike, because this is the week when the teams will travel. The 7th, the 8th, and the 9th, all 22 teams that are going to be in this thing to try and win this thing, are heading to Orlando, where they will be ensconced in their bubble, and they will be quarantined, and then we'll get ready to roll with all of this. So this is a big week, and this is why it's a big situation where we saw what happened over the weekend from our own Adrian Wojnarowski, where the Milwaukee Bucks, the favorite to win it all, and they had the best record in the NBA before the hard shutdown in March. They had to shut down their facility because of some positive COVID tests.
Yep, absolutely. So something to watch there. But as I said, much like making the band, we've seen a lot of places shut down the studio before. It seems to be all done in an effort to just get everyone to the bubble and then start to go for the protocol they've prepared for there.
So they're headed to the place where our next guest already is, and that is our intrepid ESPN NBA reporter, Malika Andrews, who has made it from the pre-bubble into the actual bubble where the teams will be headed down to in Orlando. So first and foremost, Malika, thanks for being with us. Congratulations on making it from the pre-bubble to actually inside the bubble. How is the experience so far?
Is that something that a congratulations is worth? I'm not totally sure. But, I mean, since I got into the bubble officially on Thursday, I've been confined strictly to my room. I get to leave once a day to go and get a COVID test, which is in a ballroom that's in the hotel. It's just a 2-minute walk from my room. But every day, I get meals delivered to my door at 9 a.m., noon, and 6 p.m. Someone knocks to let me know that it's there. I open the door after a couple of seconds so that it's completely hands-free and contact-free when I'm dealing with any of the staff. And officially, my quarantine is scheduled to end today after registering 7 negative tests. And I will trade in this green band that I got when I officially entered quarantine for the Aura Ring kit that the players also have that tracks any potentially early symptoms of coronavirus, as well as a device that will beep if I get within 6 feet of another person. So officially, that quarantine is supposed to end later today.
Just an incredibly detailed process, but that's what's expected at this point. And so I'm curious for you and really for any of the players that you've talked to as they gear up for this, how have all these preparations and precautions eased or maybe ramped up some of their anxiety about coming to the bubble?
Yeah, I mean, the emotions for players run the spectrum, but I spoke with Garrett Temple on a Zoom call with other reporters on Sunday, and he said that nervous anxiousness sums up how he is feeling, and that's mostly just because there is this sense of just wanting to see what is going to happen. There is so much unknown for these guys, and I can relay my experience of what it's been like, and it should be similar for them for the first 2 days of the quarantine they're going through. But obviously, from a basketball standpoint, there is just so much that still needs to be discovered. And so you have players also like JJ Redick who have said, don't conflate my confidence in my decision to go and play, which he said he really did want to go and play, and it wasn't really a tough decision for him, with a comfort in what it's going to be like inside the bubble, because there is no comfort for a lot of guys, even though they trust that the NBA has been as careful as they can be in putting together this protocol.
Malika Andrews with us speaking inside the NBA bubble. Well, she will be for the duration. The Milwaukee Bucks hope to be there for the duration as well, Malika. They had the best record in the NBA before the season came to a halt. They have the odds-on favorites to win the championship when it's all said and done, but they had to shut down their facility over the weekend because of positive tests. How much of a concern is that for the team that is right now the favorite to win it all?
You know, I checked in with a source with the Bucks, and they just told me that they were mostly bummed about the timing. You know, like you said, they are not expected to open the facility again before they travel to Orlando this week. And for a lot of guys, these last 2 weeks where they've actually been able to be inside the practice facility is the first time they've been able to touch a basketball in a while. You had Chris Middleton just this past week tell me that he actually hadn't likely touched a basketball, he guessed, in 2 or 3 months before he was able to go back into the training facility just because he didn't have access to one in his home. And so that's really where the concern lies for them, is just in the timing of they were just starting to get into this rhythm of getting their feet back under them, their basketball feet. You could see when Mike Budenholzer spoke this past week that he was excited, even though they were just individual workouts, to have players in the facility getting some practice in before they were going to make that leap and take the trip to Orlando. So really, from that standpoint is where there is a little bit of frustration, just in terms of they want to be prepared. This is a team I've been around for the past 2 years, and they are so incredibly competitive. They want to win so badly and be prepared so badly. And so this could potentially be a little bit of a bump in that road to heading to Orlando.
Talking to Malika Andrews with us, our ESPN NBA reporter inside the bubble in Orlando. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and she joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, Malika, we've talked about the preparations health and safety-wise. You've talked about the competitive basketball aspect of this that's starting to ramp back up. And let's talk about the third prong that we know exists. Everything that's gone on in this country with the movement surrounding social justice that was a big concern for a lot of players. Where are we at the latest with the NBA and the NBA players' plans going forward to try and honor the messages that we know are so important to them inside the bubble?
Yeah, so from a metaphorical standpoint, from a messaging standpoint, if you will, Black Lives Matter, as we know, is expected to be printed on the court. And players, the NBA and NBPA, were able to finalize some approved messages that can be written across the back of their jersey, like, say her name, Black Lives Matter, different things like that. And players think that's good, that's nice, that is messaging they want to get out there for people to see during their basketball games. But also from talking to different guys, there's just this urgency that they want to just make sure that those messages, those metaphors, that imagery is followed up also by real tangible action. So again, Garrett Temple spoke yesterday about the fact that he's excited that the NBA seems to be financially committed to investing in Black businesses. He was excited by the prospect of reinvesting some of the money he earns in Orlando into Black-owned businesses. And so that's really where players stand at this point, is just making sure it's clear that the NBA is going to, from an imaging standpoint, keep this cause front and center. They also just want to continue the behind-the-scenes work that can actually make real tangible change to policy that affects Black lives.
Listen, we'll see how that plays out. We'll see how it plays out. This is a huge week, as all the teams, the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th, will be traveling from their respective cities to the bubble in Orlando, and the great experiment will begin. Malika, we appreciate your time. We appreciate the things you have done to be prepared and be inside the bubble, and we look forward to chatting with you as this thing goes along. Be safe, okay?
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
7 tests already.
I can say, hearing that, and the level that she's had to go through there, all the different, you know, decals that you're going to have on, the badges and the lanyards to try and show where everyone can and can't go. We've heard about the tiered process for people's access leading into this, all of it done in the name of trying to make this as safe as possible. And as we've heard pointed out time and time again, you can do all that and it still not go according to plan. That's the unfortunate part about all this.
Yeah, and we heard J.J. Redick this morning on Good Morning America saying it's a fair discussion to say whether or not we should play. And he said, we're going to try and play. And I can't be upset with anybody who says absolutely we should play or absolutely we shouldn't play based on everything that's going on with this country right now as we deal with the pandemic. So we are underway towards the bubble this week. This week is going to be big. This weekend was big. Coming up next, it's a simple question that gets a little more complicated because as more sports are returning, we have more options. And I would like to present a potential outsider that maybe you didn't even think of, Mike Golic Jr., as to who won the weekend. We'll get to that after this.
Secret candidate alert. DraftKings is
Boom.
Here. Speaking of secrets, it's not a secret anymore. Fight Island's going down. Saturday, fighters are going to go to Abu Dhabi for UFC 251, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is going to put you in the center of the action starting this Thursday with a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Just download the DraftKings app, use code Golic, and it'll get you your free shot at the $1 million top prize for this weekend's UFC 251 contest with your first deposit. That's promo code Golic. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Trey found someone who won the weekend. Back after this on Golic and Wingo.
It's Golic and Wingo.
You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't. That's not the issue. You can eat your cake and still have it. See what I mean? If you have your cake, you eat it. That's fine. It's not that. You can't eat your cake and still have it. Well, there you go.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Eating it, you can just barf it all over your chest like you just did there.
You can't eat your cake and have it. That's what it is. Because everybody. Just stop. You can't eat your cake and still have it.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time. Dear God, Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. And thankfully, we're not having our cake. We are only eating cake around here because that is all that we subscribe to around here because we are fat and happy and life is good when you're eating cake.
Or watching people eat hot dogs or watching the ice cream truck basically stand outside this house and know that you're an easy target.
All things that are good. That's how you win the weekend, Trey.
Right. To be clear, we had this conversation earlier because we're doing the show from your parents' house, and it is not what I'd call a public throughfare, right? There's not a lot of just side traffic that's going to sneak by the street that your parents' house is on. You were stalked. Your family was stalked
it
by the ice cream truck.
It hunted me. Yes. I was like a gazelle limping in the back of their group. Yeah. Like, they could very see, all right, there's the weak one. We know we can pick that one off. Easy dinner.
Literally, there was no other reason for the truck to be on the street except for the fact that I know where those people live.
Oh, Chubba Wubba over there. Let me get a little bit of that guy.
And it worked, right? What'd you buy, like five treats?
Listen, I got a nice Choco Taco. I got the Sonic the Hedgehog with the gumball eyes.
Which that's is my a big thing for you.
That's my contention is I think ice creamy treats. I know you're a big Bomb Pop guy.
Ice cream sandwich.
I know in general, I think the ice creamy summer treats that have the gumball eyes tend to be a nice fruity flavor, your traditional popsicle feel and taste. So all the above, winners.
All right. And then, of course, you mentioned strawberry shortcake, one of the great things you can have because you say to yourself, well, it's strawberry. It's a fruit. I'm eating a fruit when you're just eating sugar.
I love fruit lies in sugary foods. Yeah. That's a story for another day that we've still got to put together.
We are workshopping that as we speak for later on in the week. But we have to do the thing we do every Monday. It is who won the weekend. We have a lot of interesting contests and contestants here. Bryson DeChambeau, who's changing the way golf is played, according to Kevin Kisner. Kevin Harvick, who won again, his third win at the Brickyard 400. And he and Denny Hamlin, I think, just alternate wins every other week at this point.
It seems like they're always the ones at the top of this thing. Denny Hamlin, who crashed with seven laps to go, that front right tire just finally gave out on him, hit the wall there. Thankfully, he was okay. Saw him get out of the car, all good there. But yeah, Kevin Harvick gets a nice easy win after that. Kevin Harvick, who will join us tomorrow here on Golic and Wingo.
Lots to talk about there. Then they've got Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo, who both won the hot dog eating contest in record fashion. There's you, who could have won the weekend by calling it. I'd like to present an outside thinking box type candidate here. And that is Lincoln Riley, the head coach at the University of Oklahoma, because all he does is continue to win when it comes to quarterbacks. Over the weekend on Saturday, the number one dual threat quarterback in the ESPN 300 rankings committed to the Sooners. That is Caleb Williams. These are the list of quarterbacks that have committed to Lincoln Riley since he took over as head coach or was the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach from 2015 to 2016. Caleb Williams, number one. Chandler Morris, number seven. Spencer Rattler in 2019, number one. Jalen Hurts, transferred from Alabama. Tanner Mordecai, number 10 pocket passer in 2018. Kyler Murray, eventual Heisman winner, transferred from Texas A&M. Austin Kendall, number 7 pocket passer, but transferred to West Virginia. And in 2015, Baker Mayfield, transferred from Texas Tech. That is a pretty good list of quarterbacks. And this just in, quarterbacks kind of an important position in football. And Lincoln Riley continues to rake in the best of the best.
Caleb Williams, I believe, is the third highest rated recruit to ever commit to Oklahoma behind Rhett Bomar and Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
Like, that's the rarefied air they're touching now. So this thing continues to steamroll forward.
It is interesting, right? I mean, Rhett Bomar and Adrian Peterson are looked at different levels.
Just a smidge. Just so more the Adrian Peterson name.
Caleb, be a lot more like Adrian Peterson when it's all said and done than Rhett Bomar. Not disparaging Rhett Bomar in any way. Adrian Peterson is a cyborg.
But to show you, and also, like, this is why this is, I think, a really more important year for Tom Herman in Texas to continue. I mean, you're now going to have a quarterback dropping off. You lose what you had last year in Jalen Hurts. It's going to be new. At the very least, Spencer Rattler, highly rated, a lot expected. But you're bringing back a boatload of everything on the other side outside of some receivers for Texas. It's your job to step up and win this thing.
Oh, and by the way, happy birthday to Zion Williamson. He's no longer a teenager. He's no longer a teenager. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen,
what 20-year-old's allowed to look like that?
Have you seen him? My God!
Oh yeah,
he is legit terrifying. That picture they posted of him after being away for a while, lost 25 pounds.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, take note. Like, Bryson DeChambeau's in bulking season right now, which usually doesn't take place in the summer, but you got to work with what you're given at this point. I'm looking forward to the cut from Bryson because it's going to come at some point. You put on a bunch of masks. This is the cycle for everyone who's ever gotten big. And then you cut after that. Very interesting, by the way. Looking forward to reading. Our own Emily Kaplan posted an article on ESPN.com talking to a bunch of former offensive linemen. I think guys like Joe Thomas, yeah, Nick Hardwick, and others about their journey of having to maintain and gain a lot of weight for the sport and then having to cut it in life after and all the difficulties that come with that. Very excited to read that one. Other interesting candidates for who might have won the weekend. Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah.
Had to get something resembling his payday.
Yeah,
in all of this, in order to now be a part of Fight Island in UFC 251.
Suddenly had leverage because of Gilbert Burns pouring out. Okay, so right now, if you had to pick one, where are you going?
I mean, I think I'm going Jorge just because I want the wild card, because I want what comes next, and because, like, the record-setting performances from Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo. I wished them and spoke them into existence in the week leading up to it on every interview I did, because selfishly, I wanted to be a part of a great record-setting call, and I got to see two thanks to those great athletes. So I'm going to try and speak this into existence, because Ariel Helwani came on and said it with us. He has the potential to be that Conor McGregor-like next figure and face of the sport.
Masvidal is fascinating on so many levels. I mean, again, he's taking this thing on short notice, so we'll see if that's an issue for him. But he actually said, Ariel was on with us, he said Usman is actually taking a bigger risk for fight training for a different fighter, and Gilbert Burns was the number one contender, but he wasn't Masvidal. All right, we all know what Masvidal is. He is literally a BMF. That's exactly what he is. And we've seen that happen time and time again. As for me, not surprisingly, I'm going for the sport of golf. Not Bryson DeChambeau, but Bryson DeChambeau by proxy, because Bryson DeChambeau makes golf more interesting to people that wouldn't necessarily be tuning into golf. He's Frankengolfer is what he is. He's rebuilt himself to be this freakazoid that looks like the former offensive lineman that is the fifth guy in your scramble that's just going to swing out of his bleep on every drive. And it's working, man. He is obliterating golf courses. He's bringing more people and more eyeballs into the sport. And it may be ruffling some feathers, but at the end of the day, that's good for golf.
He swings like he's trying to come out of his shoes every time, that I could appreciate. Yeah. I'll go with Bubba Wallace. Finished ninth again. Another top 10 finish this weekend. NASCAR's ratings are up. No other reason to bring that up. Nothing to see here.
Very, very strong there. So those are our candidates for who won the weekend. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk to Tim Hasselbeck, and Kevin Harvick will join us. Plus, can we expect to see a continued rise from Lamar Jackson this year? I don't know what more he can do after what he did last year in terms of the regular season. We'll get to all of that, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening and watching.